Good morning. Today's daf in Yuma, Samech Zayin. We're starting with the Mishnah Samech Vav Amud Beis. We're continuing here in the sixth parak of the Masechta, detailing the Seir Meshtaleach, the goat that's going to be sent off the cliff. So it starts off in the Azara, handed over to an Ishiti, and that Ishiti is going to be taking it out, making the march, the long trek, over to the edge of the cliff. And by the edge of the cliff, it's going to be the goat is going to be pushed off the cliff, dismembered as it's falling down the cliff. And Adkan Mitzvah Sira Mishtaleach. We are almost finished in describing it. The sixth parak over here is dedicated to that particular topic. The first Mishnah gave us a little bit of background information in terms of the selection of the goat, the purchase of the goats, a little bit about the lottery, but the rest of the parak, as we just started with yesterday, it goes in details now the actual process of its march to the cliff. Where the cliff is, so I can't help you. I don't know. How far is it from Yerushalayim? So there I can help. Right? Because as we're going to see the Mishnah today in the upcoming daf, so we are going to be giving details in terms of how far a march are we talking about. Okay, let's begin. The Mishnah on the bottom, Samech Vav Amud Beis. My Kiri Yerushalayim Hayu Malavino, so at Sukkah Rishona. So the first Sukkah. Okay, not to be confused with Sukkahs, but in other words, there were huts, tents, that were set up from the starting point all the way out to the edge of the cliff. So for the first sukkah, they're going to be 10 in total. The Mishnah is about to teach us. And so for the first sukkah, so he's going to get escorted. So there are going to be a lot of people escorting him. So they're going to be a total of 10 from Yerushalayim out to the tzuk. And it makes for a total of tishim ris, for 90 ris. Vishiva umech zelachol mil. Now, if you do the math, it's going to come out to 7.5 for every mil. So, al kol sukkah sukkah omrim lo. Before we get to the next point of the Mishnah, let's just pause here for a moment and let's figure out together a little bit of the math and a little bit of the distance. So, again, which direction we're headed to, I don't know, and where the cliff exactly is, I don't know, but how far a trek we are talking about, so that I do know. So, Rashi over here goes into detail in terms of the linear measurement that he's going to be traveling. So there are going to be 10 sukkahs in total. We just learned that. We also learned that it's a total of 90 ris. Now, ris is a linear measurement that we're not used to. I can't think of another place where the word ris comes up in terms of a linear measurement. It just simply means I can't think of a place. I'm sure it's out there, but okay, it's unusual. That we could say for sure. Right, mil, however, is a linear measurement that we're used to. We hear all the time. So what is a mil? A mil is 2,000 amas. Now, it also happens to be that a mil is Tchum Shabbos. Right, Tchum Shabbos is 2,000 amas. So, to go from Yerushalayim to the first sukkah is going to be 1 mil. And now, we know that there are 10 sukkahs. So basically now, how many points are there going to be in between numbers 1 through 10? So they're going to be 9 journeys from 1 to 10. So now we have a total of, from Yerushalayim to the first sukkah is 1, plus 9 intermediate mil. So 9 plus 1 is 10, so that's now 10 mil. Okay, so far so good. Now from the last sukkah, the 10th sukkah, all the way now to the tzuk, so as Rashi points out over here, it's another 2 mil. Now how did Rashi know that? Because Rashi went ahead in the Mishnah, whereas we're about to do in just a moment, and so you're going to see that's a total of 2 mil from the last sukkah until the edge of the cliff. Okay, now, that makes for a total of 12 mil. Just put that in a certain perspective. What kind of walk are we talking about? So a mil is approximately a kilometer, okay, give or take. So you're talking about 12 kilometers. That's a hike on Yom Kippur when he's fasting. Now is he actually going to be fasting and hiking 12 kilometers? So stay tuned. We're going to be discussing that also in just a moment. As far as the amount of time that it took, so we have no indication over here in the Mishnah, but. I don't know. How long does it take to walk a kilometer? Yeah, it depends how fast you walk. Okay, you have a fast pace. Okay, all right. Anyway, so right, just for a moment to digest, like what kind of work are we talking about? Okay, as far as now that march from sukkah number 10 to the edge of the cliff. So this is going to be a little bit different than all the other walkings, because consider you get to sukkah number 1. Okay, so sukkah number 1 now is in the middle of nowhere, as the sukkahs numbers 2 through 10. All the sukkahs are out there. He's basically now traveling through a midbar. He's traveling through a desert. Okay, immediately outside Yerushalayim. Okay, uninhabited area immediately outside Yerushalayim. Now we think about Yerushalayim and all the suburbs around Yerushalayim. It's hard for us to imagine. But, okay, so there was uninhabited area. So to get from sukkah number, to get from Yerushalayim to the first sukkah, no problem at all, because again, it's within a mil. On Shabbos, you're allowed to walk within Tchum Shabbos. And same thing with Yom Kippur as well. Now, not to be confused, by the way, today's discussion, yesterday's discussion. Yesterday's discussion, we were talking about Hotza'ah, that's carrying. There may be a difference between Shabbos and Yom Kippur in carrying. That was Raphram's position that we saw yesterday. And I mentioned the Gemara in Krisus, which ended up rejecting that as much as you cannot carry on Shabbos, you also can't carry in Yom Kippur as well. But that's carrying. Today's discussion is a discussion of Tchum. Now, when it comes to Tchum, it's a level playing field between Shabbos and Yontif. You can't traverse more than Tchum on Shabbos. You also can't traverse more than Tchum on Yontif as well. A bit of a misconception, but that's in fact the case. When we get to the Gemara in Beitza, so we're going to see time and again that Tchum is as much of an issue on Yontif as it is on Shabbos. So, when you're leaving Yerushalayim now, heading to Sukkah number one, so you can be escorted. In fact, the Mishnah tells us that he got a large escort to go from Yerushalayim to the first Sukkah. Is it in the violation of Tchum? No, it's not, because to get from Yerushalayim to the first Sukkah is within a mil. That's 2,000 amas, right? It's designed that way, so that you can be escorted. Now, what about Sukkah number one to Sukkah number two? No problem whatsoever. That also you can get escorted from Sukkah's numbers one to two, because that's also within a mil, that's within Tchum Shabbos. Good. So you could do that. And you get the point now. So in other words, from every Sukkah to the next Sukkah, so you can be escorted while you're going. You'll get a large entourage from Yerushalayim to Sukkah number one, but from every Sukkah to subsequent Sukkah, it's going to be, you'll be escorted by whoever's stationed in that hut, in that tent. Also, just another thing to think about, in that whoever's stationed in each one of the tents are going to basically start there before Yom Kippur. And now, their Yom Kippur, it's a quiet Yom Kippur. In other words, you're sitting out there, in a tent all by yourself, and your job now is that basically you're passing the baton. You're escorting the Ishiti with the goat from your tent to the upcoming tent. Okay, you get to tent number 10. Tent number 10 now, it's 2 mil to get from tent number 10 over to the edge of the cliff. Now, the Gemara is going to say this, Rashi is going to explain this as well. Now, whoever's escorting you basically has to stop. He can basically take you halfway there, but that's it. Now, you have license to go ahead and to travel further. You're going to be violating Tchum? Okay, you're Ishiti, right? Ishiti, you're given a lot of dispensation. We learned yesterday Ishiti Afilu B'Shabbos. We learned yesterday Ishiti Afilu B'Tumah. So over here, you're going to be going beyond Tchum. Okay, so you can do that. The person who was stationed at tent number 10, at Sukkah number 10, he can only take you halfway. He cannot take you more than halfway because he can violate Tchum. Okay, good.
Why did they put another
group? It's a fair question. And I don't know. Okay.
Unless
okay. So Omrim Lo, so Tishan Rish Shiva Mechel Chomil, I'll call Sukkah Vesukkah Omrim Lo. Okay, now we're up to the next part of the Mishnah. We're in the very top of Samach Zayin Amid Aleph, first line. So for every Sukkah Omrim Lo, Hare Mazon, Vare Mayim. So they say, okay, good. So here's food and here's water. Meaning, as he gets to every Sukkah, so he's offered small little Kiddush at every Sukkah. Now, is he going to take it? So from the Gemara and from Rashi over here, it sounds like every time he's gonna politely refuse. No, thanks, I'm good. Right? And the Gemara over here is going to invoke a principle, which is that Eino Dama, you can't compare somebody Sheish Pas Basalo and Misha Ein Pas Basalo. You got bread in the basket, you're just more at ease. It reduces the anxiety, right? You go home and you know that you have food stored in your cupboards in your closet, so you're just simply more comfortable. Good. And this idea of pas basalo applies not just to food, it applies to other areas of well in halacha, not to go through them right now. But anyway, but good. So this is the idea of pas basalo. And so basically what they're doing over here is that this is just really, the way Rashi presents it, it really is a simple reading of the Gemara, is just to relieve anxiety of the person. 12-mile hike on Yom Kippur, outside in the desert. It sounds like a real challenge, and he's not going to eat and he's not going to drink. So the way the Gemara presents it is that, yeah, but what you'll do is you'll just keep offering him food so that at least now he'll know that it's available to him and it'll help reduce the anxiety. Okay. Now, from Rashi, right, I'm not going to read the Rashi inside, but I encourage you to do so. So from Rashi, now, if you offered him the food, so is he allowed to say yes? Not totally clear from Rashi. The impression you get from Rashi is that, no, it's just there to relieve the anxiety. The Rambam, you read the Rambam, and again, I don't have the Rambam in front of me right now, I apologize, but if you read the Rambam says you don't have to decline the food. He could take the food, and he can eat the food, and he can drink. And I eat Yom Kippur. Now, if there's Sakanas Nefashos, so then anybody can eat and drink on Yom Kippur for Sakanas Nefashos. So over here, the simple reading of the Rambam would be, is that, look, it's a long hike, it's he's on a long journey. Okay, so stop along the way and eat. It's Yom Kippur. What are you doing eating on Yom Kippur? The answer is very simple. It's, right, go back to yesterday's daf. You can carry, he's allowed to carry the animal on Shabbos. He can violate Shabbos. If he's in a state of Tumah, he could still go into the Azara in the state of Tumah. So he's violating Shabbos and he's violating Tumah. So it's not the craziest thing to suggest. When I say not the craziest, the Rambam suggests it. It's not the craziest thing to suggest that he's allowed to eat as well. And the Mishnah also would indicate that, as the Mishnah points out, that he's offered food and water along the way. Umalavno, so misukah lasukah, he gets escorted from one sukkah to another. We already described that. Chutz me'achron shebehem, except for the last one. We already described that as well. But again, everything I said just came from the Mishnah. She'inu magia ima lasuk. That last person, that one that was stationed at sukkah number 10, is not going to take him out to the cliff for the reasons that we just described. Ela omen merachuk v'roos ma'asav. Now, what he is going to do is that he's going to get the best view that anybody's going to get. But that's it. It's just going to be a view. And it's not a terribly good view as well. In other words, he's standing now a full mil away from him. So I don't know, on a clear day outside, okay, he gets to see a little bit. Now what he's going to do is he's going to have the lashon shel zaharis, that wool handkerchief, towel, whatever, however you want to describe it. And chetzav kasher basel, the chetzav kasher al vein shnei kranav. And now it's going to be split into two. Half of it's going to be tied to a stone that's on the edge of the cliff, and half of it's going to be tied between the horns of the goat. Now he's going to push the goat, pushing the goat backwards. Okay? Again, if you got some picture books, I'm sure, right? I've got a couple of them in my home. Okay? It's graphic, and it's a great way to visualize it. So pushing the goat, basically rear end first. Mishnah doesn't make this point clear, but probably so that the goat will in fact not be able to catch itself, and so that it will in fact be dismembered as it's going down the cliff. And then the Mishnah describes how basically the goat wouldn't make it halfway down before being totally dismembered. Now, this person can walk back to sukkah number 10. Right, the Arish E.T. can go back to sukkah number 10. Now Rashi points out over here, now this is also going to be a violation of Tchum, meaning that now he is not one but two mil outside of the of sukkah number 10. So for him to go back, turn around and go back to sukkah number 10, it's going to be his second violation of Tchum. But as Rashi points out over here, good. In other words, he's allowed to violate Tchum. He was allowed to violate Tchum to go from sukkah number 10 to the edge of the cliff, and he's also allowed to return as well. You could for sure consider it one trip, but in other words, he's already outside Tchum. For him to go back is now also going to be another violation of Tchum. So it doesn't matter how many trips you consider, it's still going to be two violations of Tchum. But Rashi points out over here that, look, to be out there at the edge of the cliff in the middle of nowhere, that's a sakana, and then to spend there the time by himself until night. So that's a sakana. So good. So to go back to sukkah number 10, where it's a little more protected, and he's going to be now partnered with somebody else. So good. So that you're allowed to do, says the Mishnah. Now, in terms of Tumas Begadim, the Torah is very clear. The Torah says that v'hamishaleach es ha-se'ir yichabes begadav. So the mishaleach, so he's going to require kivas begadav, which means that, not that he launders his clothing, but rather that he's tameh, and the tumah is not only going to affect him, but it's going to affect the clothing that he's wearing as well. Right? That's a degree of tumah that he experiences. Good, so he's tameh. And now, when is that tumah going to come about? So the Torah is not precise. The Torah doesn't tell us with precision in terms of when he's going to become tameh. The Torah just simply says v'hamishaleach. So now we have the Torah Shabbat Peh, the Mishnah telling us that me'emasai mitameh begadim v'shiyatzei chutz l'chometz Yerushalayim. So on this, the Torah Shabbat Peh is a little fragmented in terms of when exactly he's going to be tameh. So the Tanakhama of our Mishnah says, the moment that he leaves the walls of Yerushalayim, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Mishad Tchiyaso Letzuk, and Rabbi Shimon says that the moment that he pushes the goat off the cliff. So there are two opinions in our Mishnah. Stay tuned in our Gemara. There's going to be a third opinion as well. Tanu Rabbanan, we start with the Gemara, Eser Sukkos. Torah says he's tummy. But just by doing that function. Torah says it. The Choka Torah. What makes him tummy? So again, so there are divergent opinions in the Torah Shabbat Peh. So some say when he leaves the walls of Yerushalayim, some say when he pushes it off. When exactly he's going to get the tumma is open for a debate, but he's going to be tummy. That the Torah says. It's a whatever. It's a chok. It's a chok haTorah. It's like paraduma. Good. Yeah. So Tan Rabban and Esa Sukkos v'Shneimasar Milam Hayu Div Rebbe Meir. So there are 10 sukkos. There is a total distance of 12 mil. Now that hopefully that sounds very familiar because that's exactly what we learned in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah has the numbers at 10 and 12. 10 sukkahs, 12, and I already did the math. We already counted out exactly how to get from 10 sukkahs to 12 milkut. That sheet is Reb Meir, and it makes sense. Our Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah, follows the sheet of Reb Meir. Good. Reb Yehuda Omer, Tesha sukkahs for Asara Milan. Now, Reb Yehuda has a different opinion. It's 9 sukkahs and 10 mil. Now, here again, it's just going to be difficult for me to try to explain, like, what are they arguing about? The Metzius, meaning how far a distance he has to travel? It's challenging. It's challenging to explain what the machlokas over here, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's 9 sukkahs, and it's going to be a total of 10 mil. Rabbi Yossi Omer, 5 sukkahs v'asara milin, and according to Rabbi Yossi, it's 5 sukkahs and 10 mil. Now, 5 sukkahs and 10 mil. So how do you get from 5 sukkahs to 10 mil? So avichulan al yidei eruv. So the Brisa goes on to explain that according to this third sheet of Rabbi Yossi, it's done al yidei eruv. And that means like this. Okay, to get from Yerushalayim to sukkah number 1. So again, you are capped in terms of how far you could travel. Again, the Ishiti has no cap whatsoever. He's got a job. He's got a purpose. He's got a mission. And he's got to get from Yerushalayim to the tzuk. He's got to get to the edge of the cliff. So for him, regardless of how far he's got to travel, that's how far he's got to travel. But for everybody who's going to accompany him, so they have to respect chum. So if you are now traveling from Yerushalayim, you can only go out 1 mil. But if you set up an erev chum, so then you can go out 2 mil. Good. And now the person that's stationed at sukkah number 1, so he also could set up an erev chum. Now, admittedly, and we're going to make this point clear in just a moment, he can only make an Erev Tchum in one direction, not in two different directions, which will extend his ability to walk from 1 mil to 2 mil in one direction, not two directions. Stay tuned. But meanwhile, however, everybody can provide an extender for themselves with an Erev Tchum. And so therefore, what you could basically do is you could space out the sukkahs at not 1 mil apart from one another, but rather 2 mil apart from one another. And the escorters are going to be able to walk the distance using an Erev Tchum. That is the Shita of Rabbi Yossi. So Amar Rabbi Yossi Sachli Elazar Beni. Now Rabbi Yossi says, look, the following was told to me by Elazar Beni, and Im Al Yidei Erev Yechon La'asos Afilu Shtei Sukkos V'Asar Milin. You know, if really we're going to do extensions with Erev, an Erev Tchum, so really two sukkahs and we can now cover a total distance of 10 mil. Now how do you do that? So I kind of already gave away the answer, but let's work it out. To go from Yerushalayim to sukkah number 1, so you can now have 4 mil separating them, and he could be escorted the whole time. The people in Yerushalayim are going to be making an Erev Tchum extending them, so they can walk out to now 2,000 amos from Yerushalayim to whatever, 2,000 amos. The people of sukkah number 1, so they can also provide for themselves extenders, otherwise known as Erev Tchum, and they can go from sukkah number 1 to the midpoint between Yerushalayim and sukkah number 1, and now he's going to be able to be escorted from Yerushalayim to sukkah number 1, now a total and a total distance of 4 mil. Good. From sukkah, and now how is he going to get from sukkah number 1 to sukkah number 2? Again, 4 mil distance between sukkah number 1 and sukkah number 2. Now how is he going to be escorted? Now the people from sukkah number 1 who extended in the direction of Yerushalayim, they can't even step 1 foot in the direction of sukkah number 2. Okay, but that's not so difficult. You'll just have another person stationed at sukkah number one. Meaning, once you have multiple people stationed at sukkah number one, so you can have one making an Erev Tchum in one direction, another making an Erev Tchum in another direction. It's kind of funny now. Sukkah number one ends up being landlocked for these people, right? Some of them can't step one direction to the left. Some of them can not stand one step one direction to the right. Either way, but you get it. Now you have another person stationed at sukkah number one, and now he can go with extenders 2 mil again towards the direction of the cliff. People at sukkah number two are gonna also with extensions meet him at the midpoint. And now you have 4 mil from Yerushalayim to sukkah number one, 4 mil from sukkah number one to sukkah number two. That's already 8 mil. And then from sukkah number two to whatever. You can have another group of people at sukkah number two with an Erev Tchum taking us all the way to the edge of the cliff. Or if you want, you can just simply have no extension and just go escorting them halfway. Kind of like what we described in our Mishnah. Anyway, Rav Elazar's bothered, and he tells his father, "I'm bothered. Because once you use an Erev Tchum like we just described, so then you don't need 5 sukkahs. 2 sukkahs will be enough. And you can cover 10 mil of territory, escorting him the whole time, with just 2 sukkahs. Okay. Sachli Elazar Bani, Yidei Erev, Yechon Las, I just read all that. Okay. Huh? Why is he being escorted? That was just I'm not following. What? No. I know it's confusing because there are many opinions. Just follow the Mishnah. The Mishnah says from one sukkah to another is 1 mil. There are 10 sukkahs in total, and so it's 12 mil in total. Okay, that's the okay. So Kaman Azla Ha Detanya. The Gemara says, okay, I have a brisa, and the brisa reads like this: Chutz Me'achron Shabem Shalohi Giyeh Molad Sukkah La. So over here, the Brisa says that he's always going to have an escort, except from the last sukkah until the tzuk, where he's only going to be escorted halfway. And the escort's going to basically watch him from a distance. So, come on, Karebi Meir. So that is going like Shitas Rav Meir, like our Stam Mishnah. Okay, good. Al kosukah v'sukah omrim lo harei mazon v'harei mayim. Okay, here we are at the Gemara, where upon every sukkah that he arrives at, so he's going to be offered a little bit of water, a little bit of food. Is he going to take it? Again, the Mishnah, the Gemara, the Braisa we're about to learn, not particularly clear. Tana. Me'olam lahutzer chadam lakach. So, not necessary. Ela she'ein odom emishesh lo pas basala, emishesh lo pas basala. It's just comforting to know that the food is there and it's available. So, just in case you think to yourself, I'm gonna be traveling 12 mil and I'm not gonna have food, not gonna have water, you're gonna be crazy. Okay, good. So what you do is you offer him food and you offer him water and that'll calm him down. It'll relieve the anxiety. Now again, as I already pointed out, just this is a quick review. So, but what if he actually wanted the food and the water? Again, if it's sakana, then of course. But what if it's not a sakana? He just would like food and water. Again, not perfectly clear. The Rambam's position is he could take. Maya osa cholik lashon shel zaharisi. Now tearing of the wool, the red wool into two. So the Gemara says v'nakti kule b'sela. So the Gemara first questions, well, why not just tie everything to the rock? Meaning why are we dividing into two? Why one on the head of the goat and the other one on the rock? Why just not tie the whole red wool on the rock? So kevin de mitzvah b'seir dilma kadim umabim umayas v'daite. So the Gemara says because here's the story. When does it turn from red to white? Okay, so the Gemara says, right, I would have assumed it turns red to white, right, as the goat is being thrown off the cliff. But the Gemara tells us, not necessarily, that's not true. Sometimes it turns red to white when he gets there. So, if now he tied the whole red wool over on the stone, and even before he pushed it off the cliff, it went from red to white, so now our ishit is going to say to himself, okay, good. Do I have to throw the goat off the cliff now? Meaning we turned white. We're good, right? So by attaching one of the red wools to the goat, so now it's going to keep him focused on the goat, making him aware and realize, now you have a specific mitzvah that you have to do. You have to push the goat off the cliff. So the Gemara says, okay, v'niktere kule ben karanav. Okay, so how about this? How about tying or the wool to the goat, to the head of the goat. To which the Gemara's response, no, zimnen digamishle lereshe velavadaite. The way Rashi describes it, as you're pushing the goat off the cliffs or so, sometimes his head is going to be basically tucked away, in his, right between his, front legs, and you won't see it. So in other words, you do want to see the red wool. And if in fact it turns to white, remember, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Remember, we learned earlier in the Masechta during the years of Shimon HaTzadik, it always turned white. And then, that was the first 40 years of Bais Sheni. And then some, and then for the years in between, sometimes yes, sometimes no. The last 40 years of the, of Bais Sheni never turned white. Okay. That was the progression. But anyway, but we want them to see it. We want to see whether or not it turned red, white. So the compromise is tear into two, tie half of it to the goat, half of it to the rock. And the reason why is so that I tie half of it to the goat so that the guy realizes, the Arishiti realizes he got to throw the goat off the cliff. Don't tie the whole thing to the goat because you may not get a visualization. Tanu Rabbanan, here we go now. The progression of where the red wool was tied. Birishon Ayu, Koshin Lashon Shos Aharizal, Pesach HaUlam, Mi Bachutz. So originally it was tied to the entrance of the ulam outside. So hilban hayu smechen lo hilban hayu atzavim u misbaishin. Now if it turned white, everybody was happy, and if it didn't turn white, everybody was sad and everybody was embarrassed. Okay, and aside from the obvious issues, meaning of being sad and embarrassed, also it's Yom Kippur. It's a happy day. I know it sounds funny, but right, we learned that back in Tanis, right, the two happiest days of the year. Yom Kippur, Tu B'Av. So, okay. So, halachically, we're supposed to be happy. I know, it's hard on Yom Kippur, right? Especially without food. But, it's a happy day. So, anyway, so, Hitkinashiyu Koshim Al Pesach Ulam Mibifnim. Okay, so what they would do is they would tie the red wool, but on the inside of the ulam, not on the outside. However, Adayinu Mitzitzin Veroin. But of course, you have the paparazzi. So, the people standing outside of the ulam, and I guess there were places you could peek in. Not really sure, but, people made it their business to see the red wool anyway. So hilben hayu smechen lo hilben hayu atzavin. Again, same basic issue. Okay. So hitkinushu koshen oso chetze besel v'chetze ben kranav. So basically what they did now is they said, you know what? We're sending the red wool with the ishiti. So now the total number of people that are going to see it turning from red to white or not turning from red to white is now going to be one person. And we're not going to hear from him until after Yom Kippur. Okay. Great solution. I'm Rabbi Nachum Bar Papa Mishum Rabbi Lazar Kafir Brishon. Are you Koshin Lashon Shol Zohar? It's Pesach Ulam Mibifnim. So over here, a variant view in terms of what was originally done. And that was, it was originally tied on the interior of the Ulam. Kemet Shigia Seir Lamidbar Hayumabin. And, once the goat got out to the desert, so it would go from red to white. And at that point in time, everyone knew the mitzvah was done. Shenemar, im yuchatechem kashanim kashal yalbinu. Based on the pasuk in Yeshayahu. So we now know, that the going from red to white is a simon of the kapara that we achieve on Yom Kippur. Im hayuchatechem kashanim kashal yalbinu. Sorry. Lohaya magia la machetzis ahar. Now, as the goat basically made halfway down the edge of the cliff, so already was dismembered. Gemara wants to know, now know, the limbs of the goat, mutar bahana, asar bahana. Okay. Rav Shmuel, so it's a machlokas amareim chadamar, mutar bahanamar, asurin. So one says mutar, one says asar. Now, remember the Gemara we did a couple days ago? Where the Gemara says that, you know, pushing it off the cliff, that's like Shechita. It's a quasi-Shechita, right? The Gemara, it's a really interesting Gemara, tremendous Chiddush. The Gemara said, let's say, for example, you happen to have shechted the mother on that very day, on Yom Kippur. Why are you shechting the mother on Yom Kippur? So the Gemara gave an Ukimta, or somebody was, you had a chol in your house. So anyway, so you shechted the mother on that very day. And now pushing the goat off the cliff would be a violation of Oso Vespino. Oso Vespino, the Gemara said, what are you talking about? The Torah says, "Oso v'espeno lo sishchetu b'yom echad." You're not a shecht a mother and its offspring on the same day. You're not shechting; you're pushing off the cliff. So the Gemara said, this was just a couple days ago, that the chiyaso letzuk, that the pushing off of the cliff, so that is going to be tantamount. That's going to be synonymous with the with shechita. It's a quasi shechita. It was on Samach Dal Amar Aleph. Techiyas Alatzuk Zui Shchita Sal. So that's a shchita. So as I pointed out back then, I'd like to reiterate. Not for a moment are we going to entertain the idea that it's mamash shchita, right? You can eat it now. Okay. So the Gemara over here is actually pretty meduyuk. The Gemara says, is it mutter behana'a? Right? The Gemara is not asking, is it mutter be'achila? Because it's not. Yeah, so yes, when you eat, you're for sure getting hana'a. But if the Gemara really, if the question over here really was, are you allowed to eat it? The Gemara wouldn't have said hana'a. The Gemara said, mahin be'achila. Right? Achila is even one step further than hana'a. So hana'a just simply means that you can feed it to your dog. Right? You'll take the goat pieces and you'll give it to your dog. Okay. So. Right, so should I go down or should we kill it?
No one quoted this Mishnah saying that it doesn't happen.
Right, the Gemara's question was more of an abstract. It was more of a, what if it didn't die? In other words, but you're right, practically speaking, wouldn't die. Kind of like one of Rabbi Elazar's responses that he gave yesterday. Right, what if it gets sick and what do we have to carry it? Rabbi Elazar says, don't worry. It didn't happen. So good, so from a practical standpoint, you're 100% right. It never happened where it wasn't dismembered by the time it got to the bottom, but what if it didn't? It was more of an abstract question. Okay. So lo hayu magia lamachit tesahari bailu osanivar mahim bahana. Sorry, I'm just rereading it. Rav Shmuel charamar mutarim charamar asurim. Okay, so machlokas amrai mandam mutarim. Now the Gemara over here is so interesting. The Gemara doesn't give svara. The Gemara cites psukim and drashas. Okay. So dichsiv ba midbar. So it says that you're going to take it out to the midbar. Now that's an interesting drasha. The Gemara doesn't elaborate on the drasha. Rashi does. Rashi says, Bamidbar, just like the Midbar is something which is Hefker, right? We associate Midbar with Hefker, meaning it's ownerless, and it basically it's no man's land. You find something in the Midbar, you could take it. So over here, the goat pieces, the limbs of the goat, the dismembered limbs, so it's mutter, it's Hefker. That's one way to see it. So Mandam Rasurim Dichsiv Gezeiram. Now, on the other hand, the Torah also says that it's an Eretz Gezerah, right? Kind of hard to translate into English, but the word Gezerah comes from also the same root as the word Gozer. When you make a decree, it's a Chumrah. So over here, embedded in the word Gezerah is the idea that the limbs of the goat are, in fact, Usser. And now the Gemara is going to go through its classic back and forth. So the Gemara says, Amanda Amar Surin, Hai Midbar my Avidlei. Yeah. So if you are of the position that's usher, we know Rav and Shmuel debate, we don't know who says what, but if you're of the position that it's usher, so what do you do with the word midbar? So mibay lelechidatanya, hamidbara, ba midbar. You read through the psukim and achrei mos, you're going to see the word midbar not said once, but three times. Why three times? So, larabos novigivov, novigivon, shilo ubeis olamim. So there are three basic, beis hamikdash, if you will. So, or three categories of Beis HaMikdash. Nov and Givon, that is when we first came into Eretz Yisrael. Well, actually, when we first came into Eretz Yisrael, so the Mishkan was set up in Gilgal. And then we set up Shiloh for a long time, 369 years. Then, between Shiloh, the destruction of Shiloh, and the building of the first Beis HaMikdash, so they were basically back to it was like a Mishkan-type edifice. So, but not as formal as Mishkan. Shiloh, and it was stationed in Nov and Givon. Why not just Nov the whole time? Well, you know why? Because Shaul came along and basically obliterated Nov. So fine. But basically during those interim years between Mishkan Shiloh and the first base of Mikdash, you had Nov and Givon. Anyway, so it doesn't matter what platform we're talking about. Whether we're talking about Mishkan Shiloh, whether we're talking about Nov and Givon, or whether we're talking about the actual Beis HaMikdash, that's the Beis Olamim. So you're going to go through this process of taking the goat out to the Midbar. Okay, now, if you are of the position that's mutter, what do you do with the word gzera? So for that, we have another brisa, gzera. Ein gzera ela chatucha. Gzera means that it has to be cut up. It has to be dismembered. Meaning the goal over here is to throw the goat off the cliff so that it becomes dismembered. Davar achi ein gzera ela davar hamizgazer. V'yored. Now the difference between drasha number one and drasha number two, the way Rashi describes it, is that the first one, right? I didn't explain it well. Meaning, it's not going on the goat; it's rather going on the cliff. The cliff is being described as something which is jagged, right? Send it off of a jagged edge. The second drasha, the second way we darshan it, is that it's going on the goat, meaning the goat has to be dismembered. Davar acher, gzer shematomar, masa tohu. Now, a third interpretation of the word gzera is that you might think, masa tohu, this has got to be, this doesn't sound like our religion. Sounds like another religion, right? It's tohu vavo, right? What are we doing? We're taking a goat, throwing it off a cliff? What? So, that's what I might thought, tamalomar, ani Hashem. So if you look at the pasuk, it says that, no, this is all part and part of the instruction manual, otherwise known as the Torah. So ani Hashem gezarti ve'en lecha rishus la'arav bahen. It's gezeres ha'melech. HaKadosh Baruch Hu decreed, this is what we're supposed to do. Good. So this is what we're supposed to do. Right? And you now want to challenge it? No, don't challenge it. Meaning, this is all part of gezeres ha'melech. Amarava mistabra kaman da'amra mutarin. Okay, so now, basically up until now, the question on the table is the limbs on the bottom of the cliff, mutar asur. So we didn't have a svara, we had drashas. Either you darshan the word midbar, you darshan the word gzera, but there's no svara. Along comes Rava. Rava says svara. Ama Rava mistabra. Now, if it's left up to logic and reason, so here's what I think. So command amar mutar, and I think it's mutar. Alo amar Torah shalach l'takala. Right, an idea which the Gemara expresses many times, you can see on the side of the Gemara, Kedushin, a couple times in Chulin, and that is that whenever the Torah says, you know, send something loose, send something out into the wild, so then the Torah is expecting now that someone's going to stumble over it? Of course not. The Torah would never expect me to send something away and that somebody else would stumble over it. Right? I'll give you another example. The Mitzorah is part of his Tahara process. So there are going to be two birds involved on day one of his Tahara process. So one bird is going to be shechted and the other bird is going to be sent free. Okay, the bird that's sent free. Is it asur or is it mutter? So the Gemara comments, the Gemara says elsewhere, that no, of course it's going to be mutter. What, you're going to send the bird free and then someone else is going to take it and violate the isur of benefiting from an asur bird? No. Lo amra Torah shileich l'takala. So same thing over here. Right? The Torah wouldn't expect us now to have somebody come across the limbs of the goat only to violate the isur, meaning mistabr said that's going to be mutter. Tanur Rabbanan, Azazel Shiye Azvikashe. So when the Torah says that it's a Seir Lazazel, so what does the word Azazel mean? So over here, the Bryce is going to give a couple of explanations. One is that Shiye Azvikashe, it's got to be really strong. And the word El, right, we obviously wanted the Shem Hashem, but at the same time also, it means strong. Yachol be Yishuv Tamalom Rabbi Midbar. Now I might have thought that you could do it somewhere within the city. No, it's got to be out in the desert. What about and the edge of the cliff? Tamalom or gzera. So the word gzera means that it's got to be jagged and it's got to be the edge of a cliff. Tanya learned another braisa. Azazel kashe shebaharim. It's got to be a really, really tough mountain. V'cheinu omer v'es elei ha'aretz. You see the word el over there used to describe something which is strong. Right, when we say, I'll say Elohim. When we say Elohim, Shem Hashem, but using the shame of Elohim, so we're talking about the Baal Yecholos, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the strongest, right, in the superlative, right, he could do anything. So that is encoded in the word Aleph Lamed. So over here, V'es Elei Ha'aretz Lakach. So in the context of the Pasuk, it means the strong of the land. Okay, so the word Azazel also means that it has to be taken off a really tough cliff. Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel, the Gemara quotes another pshat. Azazel shemechapel al-maisa uza ve-azael. Okay, Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel gives a different pshat in the word azazel, and that is that what is it going to be mechaper for? It's going to be mechaper for uza ve-azael. Now, what is that a reference to? So everyone get ready. Rashi, I'm reading the Rashi inside. Uza ve-azael. Rashi writes, malachei chavala. So we're talking about angels over here, destructive angels, shiyardu la'aretz, bimei na'ama achos tuvokayin. So we're somewhere in the tkuf in the period between Adam and Rishon and Noach. And so you had destructive angels who descended down to earth. And va'alem na'amar v'yu b'nei Elokim es b'nos ha'adam. And so what they did is that they saw the women, all right, and they impregnated them. Okay, so fallen angels, fallen destructive angels impregnating women. I didn't think that would be up for a topic of discussion within the daf today. Okay, clearly it is. But Rashi says all this is really just code. And it's, what is it code for? Gilu Arayas. right? Klomar, right at the end of the Rashi. Al ha'arayis mechaper. So it's just a way of describing that it is a violation of Gilo Arayis. Now, over there with the fallen angels and the women, so why, what exactly is that Gilo Arayis? It just simply means that it was illicit relations. It's relations that shouldn't have occurred, shouldn't have taken place. Okay. So the, but specifically it's mechaper and Gilo Arayis. Now, the Gemara over here seems to be a little bit limiting. Meaning, we already spent just a couple of dapim here in our Masechta, going all the way back to Samach Aleph, and just a couple days ago as well, describing how that the Sir Meshalech is Mechaper on all Shar Averas. The only notable exception that's not going to be Mechaper on is going to be the Avera of Tumas Mikdash VeKadoshav. But outside of that Avera, it's going to be Mechaper on all other Averas. So over here, the focus on Arayas. So, we made this comment before, but it's worthwhile making again. There is some deeper connection between Yom Kippur and Arayas, right? Come Mincha time, what do? We open up the Chumash on Mincha and Yom Kippur, and we read about Arayas, right? It seems to be a strange choice of reading. Now, granted, by the way, it happens to be the next Parsha, not Remos. And it's not the very next Parsha, by the way, right? But the very next Parsha is Shkut Echut. But in other words, they open up to Achrimos, and it's first Avodas Yom Kippurim, then it's Shkut Echut, and then it's the Arayos. So in the morning we read the Avodas Yom Kippurim, and then the afternoon in Mincha and Yom Kippur, we read the Arayos. So why are we reading the Arayos? So I know I'm not giving a lot of depth over here, but there is a connection. There's a deep connection between Yom Kippur and the Isser of Arayos. And over here, the Gemara says, as a pshat, that the Azazel is Maisa Uza V'Azael, and that's just a reference to Gilo Arayos. That's an open-ended question. I appreciate that you expect me to know all that, but I don't know. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. So, Es Mishpatei Ta'asu Devarim She'il Malei Nichtavu Din Hu She'ichtavu. So the Torah says that you have to follow my mishpatim. Now, what's mishpat? Now, I know you've heard this before, but the Gemara goes ahead and categorizes the various mitzvos. So mishpat is a reference to if the Torah wouldn't have said it, we would have figured it out, and that is ve'elohein avodas kochavim gilo arai shvichus damim gezel birchas Hashem. Okay, so including mishpatim is avodah zarah. Assuming, of course. The starting point of the assumption is that you believe in Akash Baruch Hu, you believe in a monotheistic God. So then, of course, worshiping anything else is logically irrational. Okay. And it goes without saying, right, Gilo Arayos, right, especially Eishes Ish, right, that is also something that we would have put on the books. And murder and theft and blasphemy. So all those we would have figured out on our own without the Torah. And is chukos haitishmaru. Now, what falls under the category of chukim? So, dvarim she'asatam meshev aleihem. Satan over here, Rashi says that's code for Yetzer Hara. So the Yetzer Hara tells us that, you know what, these don't make any sense whatsoever. Why bother? And including that is Elohein, achilas chazir, so kashrus, and levisha shatnis, and wearing woolen linen, and chalitza yivama, and the process of the chalitza, v'taras mitzor v'sira mishaleach. And all these are included in Chukim, right? It's so funny, right? Right on Parshat Chukas, by the way. You know what's conspicuously absent from the list over here of things that are Chukim, right? The ultimate Chuk in the Torah, and that's the Parah Aduma. Okay, but the simplest way to explain it is that we're just sampling, right? A sampling of Mishpatim, a sampling of Chukim. Okay, so V'shem Atomer Ma'isa Tohen. Now you'll think to yourself, like, this doesn't make any sense whatsoever. What difference does it make what I eat, whether I eat this or I eat that? So the and wool and linen together, like what's the logic in that exactly? So Tamalamar ani Hashem chakaktiv vein lechavrishos sahara bahen. So good. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says good, but that's exactly what a chok is. A chok means that these are the mitzvahs of the Torah that I instituted, that I established, and don't think twice. Meaning I know it's illogical, I know it's irrational, and shouldn't think twice about it. Okay, I'll just mention the Shmona Prakim. There are eight, if you will, essays of the Rambam that he writes. Okay, Hedy, your Rambam for the day. So there are eight essays of the Rambam, the Shmona Prakim. So he basically deals with basic philosophical issues. So the sixth essay of the Rambam. So he basically writes, our mitzvah is supposed to shape us and change us and mold us and influence us and basically make us a particular personality. So the Rambam says it depends on whether we're talking about chok or we're talking about mishpat. The Rambam writes that if we're talking about a mishpat, so that's supposed to shape us. Meaning, when the Torah says don't murder, so that's a mishpat. That's it's a logical law, right? You go to any civilized country, and it's on the books. You're going to find it, right? Don't kill anybody. Good. So the Rambam writes, that's supposed to shape us. It's supposed to make us more sensitive human beings. But when it comes to a chok, the Rambam says, no, that's not supposed to shape us whatsoever, right? In other words, when the Torah says don't eat kosher, like, don't think to yourself that I'm not going to eat kosher and it's gonna shape my religious personality. It's not going to shape your religious personality. The Rambam says, Rashi says on Chumash as well. The Rambam says, no, you can go around saying that you like to eat non-kosher food. That's fine. Correct. Meaning it's a chok. You understand that it's a chok. It's not supposed to be logical. It's not supposed to be rational. And that's fine. And that's not there to shape your persona. The mishpatim, on the other hand, are there to shape your persona and actually to actually make you a more sensitive and religious individual. Good. That's the sixth parak of the Rambam. Okay. Good. The emasai matame begadim. Last topic for today. Tana rabbanu mishalach matame begadim ve'ena shalech es hamishalech matame begadim. So the mishalech, the one himself who is sending out the goats, so he's going to be metame begadim, but the one who appoints him, the sholech, es hamashalech, so he's not going to be metame begadim. Yachol mishiyetze chus hachomas azara. The moment that he steps foot outside the azara, that's when he's metame begadim. Tamalamar hamashalech. So it says, mishalech, yeah, mishalech, yachol hachayegi alatsok, so fine. So maybe when he gets to the edge of the cliff, tamalamar, viham mishalech. So haketzad. So where exactly is the sweet spot where he's going to be metame begadim? The moment that he walks out of the walls of Yerushalayim, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, so we have now recorded one opinion. There are two more opinions. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Azazel v'chibes ad sheigia letzuk. So it says Azazel, it says v'chibes. So that means to say that when he gets to the edge of the cliff, remember, earlier this morning, one of the interpretations of Azazel is a description of the actual cliff itself, that it's hard, that it's tough, good. So when he gets to the cliff, that's a second opinion. Rabbi Shimon Omer, v'hamashlech ha'seir l'azazel v'chabes begadav, zarko bevas rosh, u'metame begadim. When he pushes the goat off the cliff, then and only then is he going to be metame begadim. Three opinions in terms of when he's experiencing so much begadim. Let's recap, let's review our daf today. Started with the Mishnah giving us a description of our ishit, our designated man, our point man, who's going to be marching the cliff from the azara all the way out to the edge of the cliff. So the escort system that's going to be provided for him and the various sukkahs that he's going to be encountering. Although there is more than one opinion, our Mishnah presents one opinion in terms of total number of sukkahs and basically the escort system that's provided. From Yerushalayim to the first sukkah, it'll be an entourage of people. Not just people, by the way, Yekiri Yerushalayim, the dignitaries of Yerushalayim, who are going to be accompanying him from Yerushalayim to sukkah number one, and from there... So it's not a terribly lonely walk, but it'll be one escort from each sukkah to the next 10 sukkahs in total. From sukkah number 10 until the edge of the cliff, another two mil to traverse. So that means that now the walk itself is going to be a total of 12 mil. It's a significant hike. At every sukkah, he's going to be offered food and water. Simple pshat of both our Mishnah and the Brisa that we learned this morning is not because he was going to take, but it just simply alleviates and relieves his anxiety, you know that at least it's there. The Mishnah then goes on to describe how you're going to be tying the red wool, tearing it into two, tying one part to the horns of the goat, tying the other one to the rock, and the Gemara spent time today discussing why specifically in that manner. Generally speaking, says the Mishnah, halfway down the cliff and already the goat is going to be dismembered. Good. And the last part of the Mishnah is that the Torah says that he's metame begadim. The Torah's pasuk, the Torah's wording is, Rashi quotes at the end of the Mishnah, HaMishalech es asir yichabes begadav. So he's going to require kibbutz begadim, meaning to say that he's tame. Now, at what point precisely is he going to be tame? So good, so our Mishnah gave us two opinions, and at the end of the Gemara today, we had three opinions. In terms of topics that we covered in the course of the Gemara today. So number one, the various opinions in terms of how many sukkahs and how far he has to traverse. So there are three positions in total. The idea of pas besalo, just having food in your pantry, that relieves anxiety. And again, our Gemara discusses it in relation to one issue, happens to apply to other issues as well. Other topics that were discussed, why specifically splitting the red wool into two, Gemara went through that. Various stages of where the red wool was tied, outside of the ulam, inside of the ulam, then given to the person who was going off with the ishiti, when the goat got to the bottom of the cliff dismembered, are the limbs of the goat going to be aser bahana or mutar bahana? So the Gemara presents a machlokas. Rav says that it seems to him to be most reasonable to suggest that it would be mutar bahana because we do not, the Torah would not instruct us to send something away litakala. And then the remaining part of today's daf, a little bit of hashkafa, where the Torah says that they're mishpatim and they're chukim. Mishpatim, so they're rational, they're reasonable. We would have figured it out. Chukim are irrational. The Torah says, good, make sure that you recognize that, and despite the fact that it's irrational, right, kashra, sira, mishaleach, and an assortment of others, despite the fact that they're irrational, but that's okay. That's part of the chukos ha-Torah. Kadosh Baruch Hu, in his infinite wisdom, decree that we do them, and not for a moment should we consider not following his chukim. Adkan.